Hey, welcome to the Mazer Patrol podcast. I'm Kevin, and I have a special guest with me here today.
Hi, how you doing?
So this is John Bellotti, who is a very talented artist from Robo7, and talk a little bit about some of the work you've done.
Hi, Kevin. Well, first off, thanks for having me on the podcast. And let's see, what kind of work do I do? I mean, I do mainly kaiju work, which is sort of what led me to this podcast, basically, if you think about it. My big thing was doing Godzilla movie posters, sort of like the original 60s Showa era Godzilla movie posters, which was sort of a lot of like copy and paste stuff. And I kind of said, I want to do Godzilla posters from the Showa era with how I think they should have looked. So I just started drawing my own Godzilla posters, and I started doing conventions like, around the country, and shows like MegaCon and G-Fest and New York Comic Con. And I've been doing pretty well at these shows, selling my Godzilla art. And I've branched out to doing Kung Fu movie posters like Enter the Dragon, Game of Death, Hong Kong action movie posters, lots of commission work, which has led me to properties like Aliens and Halloween. It's sort of just been snowballing from there. I've done comic covers. I've done Sofubi toys, the header card artwork. I'm designing a Sofubi as we speak. And I do it all out of love. I do it all out of passion. And it's been a great ride, man. I met really wonderful people like yourself and Chris Oglio of Seismic Toys, artists like Dope Pope, Lenny Romero, and authors like August Ragone, who I met at G-Fest. And it's been a wild ride, man. And it's good to be here. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of people that we're both familiar with, and I think for most of them we get to see them on a regular basis at conventions. But it's been an interesting convention season these past couple years, to say the least.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
So totally. I figured this was a good opportunity, given the state of current events, to kind of unpack what's been going on with a couple of the conventions, especially, in the kaiju field. But, I go to conventions, I tend to give presentations, and I have one perspective, but you have a completely different perspective, being in the artist alley and interacting with people on the floor. So I figured that this is an opportunity to kind of go through and talk about how things have been going and kind of where things might go in the future for conventions, and especially one of our favorite conventions that we'll get to later. Right. I want to say I might be critical of some behavior, but I'm not part of any convention planning staff, and I know that it's very difficult for conventions to stay afloat, and that there's a whole lot of logistics that goes on, and I don't want to come across as like an attack piece on anyone. But I think, we can go into perhaps constructive criticism about some of the policies that we see engaged in some of the shows that we go to. I want to say also that I don't think either one of us is a lawyer, but we
not
have,
far from it.
we have some understanding from being around the block a little bit about how things tend to get done, and talking with people who run conventions about best practices and why things might be done the way they are. So that said, one last disclaimer I want to get out there is, it's difficult in the current age, but I think it's worth stressing. I am a firm believer in the coronavirus pandemic. For people that think that it's a hoax, you might want to just stop listening right now, because you're going to have a bad time with the way that we talk about this. It's something that has been a very heated conversation, but I think that precautions are a necessity for a lot of the shows, especially given the current time. And we can kind of talk about how they've been handled well and where they've kind of fallen not so well in some of the shows over the the past few years and you know, suggestions for the future. And how all of this kind of came to my mind to begin with is at the end of November, there was a big anime convention in New York, Anime NYC, which normally I would go to. Just through sheer happenstance, I happened to be leaving town that weekend. But John, you were there, right?
I was, yes. It was my, going on my fourth Anime NYC, excluding 2020, which didn't happen. So it was an unbelievable show. I was also joined by fellow kaiju brothers, Doe Pope and Lenny Romero, and we all had an unbelievable experience at that show. Now, if I knew what the fallout from that show was going to turn into, I kind of could have predicted what was going to happen, but I didn't expect it to go the way it did. Having said that, would I do the show again? Yes, a million times. Yes, I would do that show. And for those that don't know, I mean, would you like to just go right into what happened at Anime NYC?
Yeah, well, there was a new variant of the coronavirus, Omicron, that was first detected in South Africa, but it turns out that the first person to have it endemically in the U.S., meaning somebody that had not traveled in from outside the country, was an Anime NYC attendee. And as a result, this convention has kind of become the focal point for how the CDC is monitoring the variant, and has really made a lot of headlines in terms of everyone talks about this New York anime convention as ground zero for the pandemic and sort of modeling how this strain is going to spread through the population. So all of my friends who went were like, well, I wasn't expecting to be part of an international news story, but c'est la vie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That said, it sounded like, generally speaking, things were handled pretty well there. You know, I've talked with a couple people who were there as attendees, and it sounds very similar to what I had seen in August when I went to Otakon, was that, you know, masking was generally pretty good, but there wasn't much in the way of social distancing. And I heard that there were some problems with the line getting in, so they were supposed to be checking vaccines at the door, which is good. They weren't doing that at Otakon, but at NYC, because the lines were getting so long, at some points apparently they were just kind of waving people through.
Right.
So I think that's a good notion, but in practice it didn't work out quite as well as they had anticipated. And you know, temperature checks are another thing that a lot of conventions have been saying that they've been doing. I don't think it's actually been done anywhere, and it's kind of, the temperature checks aren't very effective, because by the time somebody is actually going to be having an elevated temperature, they will have been contagious for a while. So it's
right.
You know, that's not the right target population there. But that said, it's a lot better than some of the other conventions that I've been to. I went to Monster Mania. And basically, they said that masks were required, but maybe 10% of people were actually wearing them, and that's outright concerning.
I gotta say, I did New York Comic Con in October at the Javits, which was my first convention back since Anime NYC in 2019 at the same spot, and they did it really well. They limited capacity, which normally they sell 250,000 tickets or whatever. This time it was 170,000. It still doesn't make it any more spacious inside. You know, I mean, it was busy, and we all did really well, but the line moved pretty good. I was able to just sort of zip right in and zip right out. They had metal detectors. You know, typical ReadPop operation. ReadPop is a company that runs New York Comic Con as well as many major conventions around the world. Anime NYC, the first day I was able to zip right in, they didn't have metal detectors, but you had to show proof of vaccinations as well as New York Comic Con, and you have to wear a mask, both shows. But apparently the line on Friday at Anime NYC was so bad that I heard a story of some guy was waiting outside for 4 hours on Friday. And mind you, even though it was November 19th, I think the first day was, it was actually colder that day than it is now in New York in December, which is crazy. And at the Javits, being that it's right on the water, that wind is horrific sometimes. So my heart went out to that guy. So Saturday morning, I had a hard time getting in because they changed the entrance policy. And it was sort of being figured out on the fly. They were redirecting us from the Crystal Palace upstairs down the ramp into the other entrance. And then when we got down there, they said, no, you have to go up there. And I said, no, it was going to get ugly, until one security guard said, no, you come over here. And you had to show a proof of your vaccination by wearing a wristband at all times. Now, I think they had a crowd of 53,000 people, which is a fraction of New York Comic Con, but they rented out more of the Javits, so it was a lot more spread out. And there was, like, saying they were Comic Con, there were huge gaps at the Javits of just no vendors because they kept it open. But Artist Alley at Anime NYC was so packed that it was harder to get to the bathroom in Anime NYC than it was at Comic Con. And historically, it was always the opposite. So it was so packed in Artist Alley, and I was really surprised that they kept the tables so close together and the space behind the tables was kind of tight. And I actually wrote to the owner of the show, the guy who runs it, and I pretty much just shared that info with him. I said, look, I know you don't have an easy job, but the guy's name is Peter Tatara, and I met him at a convention called Five Points in Brooklyn, and he's a really nice guy. He's a huge Godzilla fan, loves what he does, and just wants to put on a good show. And I said, and he never responded, but I'm sure he's dealing with a lot more than what, you know,
yeah,
little artist is writing to him. And I just basically said, look, everything was great, except I think Artist Alley could have been spread out more, considering that there was large gaps in the vendor area that they could have spread it out to. So aside from that, I mean, you know, it was like, what, a week and a half or 2 weeks later, I'm trying to remember where I was. I think somebody sent me a New York Post article about it, and I went, oh, shit. But I kind of expected that there would be a COVID case, though I don't know it was going to be Omicron. But, you know, I guess you have to kind of expect anything at this point. And then that day at work, I talking to a buddy at work, and we're sort of laughing about it. And I went and I told our nurse about it. So I guess to give you some background, I work on a TV show. I run the scenic paint department. And because of the new COVID protocols in Hollywood, we have to have a nurse on staff at all times. We have to get tested weekly. So I went and I told the nurse about it. And she said, well, when was the show? And I said, it was about 2 weeks ago. It was close to 2 weeks. And she said, well, you would have had symptoms by now. And do you feel anything? I said, no. She's like, okay, well, go take a rapid test, because they do rapid and PCR at my job. And so I did the PCR already, and I did a rapid test the next day, and I was fine. And they checked up on me like the week after. And that day I go home and I sit down to put on the news. And as I'm getting my drawing tablet out, because I like to draw, obviously I draw when I get home after work, keep on the TV. And the first thing on the 6 o'clock news is Anime NYC, Omicron, Mayor Bill de Blasio is on the screen, Governor Kathy Hochul is on the screen. They have a press conference over this. They're telling people not to panic. I was getting text messages, emails, friends were texting me. Even up to, I think, yesterday, I'm still getting text messages from the New York City Test and Trace Corps. And then I read what basically you said, is that they're using this event as like a social experiment to see the spread of Omicron. And then when I heard that the guy that had it recovered in 5 days and had mild symptoms, I said, okay, well, I mean, he was fully vaxxed. That's what the vaccine does, right? It mm-hmm. doesn't mean you're not going to get it. It means if you get it, you're not going to die. And it did its job. So I really kind of wasn't going to worry about it. And to be honest, I'm working every day around, you know, 20, 30 people that come from different towns and states all in one area to work, and we have to wear a mask all day. But I don't know. I mean, we're all fully vaxxed, and some people aren't vaxxed, but you know, I still show up to work, and I'm kind of not, I'm not saying I'm over COVID, but I guess I'm not as scared of it as I once was. So the hearing about the Omicron being a little bit milder and the health experts saying that Delta is still a problem is a little bit of a relief, all things considered, Kevin, you know, could have been a lot worse. So yeah, that's the Anime NYC experience. And yeah, everyone else that was at the show pretty much said the same thing. They're still getting text messages. And I can't imagine the guys running that show, knowing how hard it was to put on a show in a pandemic era, and to be the first ones to have like this, you know, Decepticon name sounding variant. So I guess it was only fitting it was at an anime show. Anyway, I can't imagine that. But I will give Peter a lot of credit and why I respect this guy. And this sort of will tie into what we talk about later on regarding G-Fest, where, you know, if you're a leader, especially if you're running a show this size, you have to take ownership of what you're running and responsibility for how your show is conducted, how your people are handling things for you, because you can't run everything on your own. You need a great team, and they have a really good team. I mean, the opportunities they give artists, the exposure, it's unbelievable. It really is. And that show will get 100% of me every single time I do it. And rightfully so. And right before the Omicron thing happened, with how bad the line situation was and how bad they fucked up, the owner took to social media, wrote like this massive essay, basically taking full responsibility for the debacle that it was, and took complete ownership of it and apologized. And didn't put any of the blame on the fans. He put it all on himself and vowed to do a better job. And you don't even see that from the president of the United States. And seeing that really just opened my eyes to how a leader should really run whatever it is that person is running. And again, this will definitely lead into G-Fest. So I do want to commend them for that. They haven't said anything about Omicron aside from basically they released a few other statements saying, hey, like, look, this is what happened. Do yourself a favor and go get tested. So they're not shirking responsibility. Something like that is beyond their control. You know, they're not acting on the will of God. They're just people trying to run a business and put on a good time. Basically, they just want to have a good time. And so hearing Peter come out and seeing Peter come out and say the stuff that he said about it all, it was really nice, man. It was really, really nice. So, yeah, again, will I do the show again? Absolutely. And will I do other shows? Of course. Like, why wouldn't I, you know? But
yeah, I mean, so, yeah. It sounds like they, for the most part, you know, the one thing and that you mentioned that actually was an echo of what I saw at Otakon also, but at Otakon, maybe 25% of the vendors hall was full, and everyone was sort of crammed into 125% at the regular density, whereas they could have been much more spread out. Right. But I think both the Walter Washington Convention Center and the Javits Center, because they were COVID relief facilities, have you know, special air scrubbers and everything to make everything extra safe for the attendees, you know, on top of the masking and vaccine ordinances. So, you know, I think it's about as safe as it can be.
Right.
You know, and barring, you know, the panel rooms are always going to be a little bit of an issue if you have people all sitting right next to each other. But you know, that's the same deal as when you're on an airplane, basically.
Right. Pretty much. Or a bus or a train, or if you're waiting on the line at the supermarket. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's you do the best you can, Kevin. You know, like you do the best you can with all of it, and sometimes it doesn't work out, and most times it does. So it's again, I don't envy any of these people in these positions, and I can't imagine the insurance hoops they have to jump through just to put on these shows. I mean, I know at our job, they're spending, God, I think I heard last season when we started up again during COVID, their budget for testing was $2 million. And I think halfway through the season, it went up to like $10 million on testing alone. So I can't imagine. I just can't imagine, man.
Well, those prices, you know, sometimes people will say like, oh, why don't they just cancel and hold something again next year? And that's really because you have to invest so much so far in advance in order to put on a convention.
Right.
Unless there's a legally defined act of God that local government ordinances say that you can't run a show.
Right.
They are then on the hook for, you know, delivering that show. And even if they cancel it, they still have to pay the venue every bit that they've put in up front, which is right. This force majeure clause is what they call it. So that is why sometimes you'll get the feeling that, you know, they'll be running something against their better judgment. And I think it's good. You know, the shows that go ahead and they make it very clear, you know, kind of, we're doing everything in our power. Here's what we're doing, and trying to run the show as responsibly as possible instead of, you know, just kind of trying to ignore things in order to ensure as many people as possible attend.
I'm picking up the subtle little digs there. I love it. You know, it's COVID now. It's basically like I think like my doctor said, it's going to be something like a mitigated risk, like maybe mitigated is the wrong word. Basically, when you get in your car to drive to the local grocery store down the block, there is a chance you might crash and die. You know, when you set foot on an airplane, there's a chance the plane might go down in flames. Anything you do, you might fall down the stairs. There's going to be a level of risk. And now with COVID, the thing's not, it's not going away. So now you just have to basically weigh your risk options. Like, do I want to be here? Do I not want to be here? And for these shows to go on, like, they have to do it. I mean, this is their business, and there's going to be COVID cases, and that's a fact. And even with my job, you know, every week when the weather gets cold, we start getting confirmed COVID case emails. But the show keeps going. You know, the show has to go on. Now, I know they just shut down a Broadway show. I don't know the details. It sounds like it might, for them to shut down, it might be a cast member. But other TV shows I was on, you know, if there was positive cases, then okay, then they would go on a little break for 2 weeks. But our show, they just removed the person, they did the testing and tracing, and then they just kept going on. And it's just going to be something we're going to have to deal with for a long time. And shows are going to have to evolve and bob and weave and basically, you know, understand it is a risk and not downplay it or pretend you just wash your hands and it goes away. You know, they have to put it out there like, hey, look, we're doing this show, and they're not going to say don't come, but they're not going to say, you know, weigh your risk options, but they're going to say, look, if you want to come, you got to be fully vaxxed and you got to wear a mask. And that's it. That's all they can really do. And as long as the state is allowing it, then of course they're going to put it on. You know, like what else are they going to do, Kevin? They're just going to shut down and never have shows again? You know, sporting events are still going on. And I just saw today there's a bunch of sports teams, like, there's like 37 COVID cases, I think, in the NFL alone right now, which is kind of a lot for them. But the shows are still going on. The games are still being played. So,
yeah. And some of these organizations, you know, if they do cancel a show, they might not ever financially recover. So there will be no more, even huge conventions. You know, I've talked with some people that run some of the top 10 anime conventions in the U.S., which you think would be ironclad, but they're like, no, if we have to cancel our show, our organization is toast. Like,
it's right, because it's all predicated on that show. If you don't have a show, you don't have income, right? I mean, that's kind of how it is. It's like my business too. If I call out of work, I don't get paid for that. It's all, I guess, per diem is what you call it. Mm-hmm. You just get paid for the time you're in. But if I call out for a day, I don't get paid. If I'm out for the week, then I can collect unemployment. But if I just take a day, you don't get paid for that stuff. So you know, you have to show up basically. So I understand what they're dealing with.
Yeah. One interesting phenomenon that's come up during the pandemic is these online conventions, which, you know, as far as what I do, I tend to not see a huge difference because, you know, I just go and I give a lecture. I don't get to interact with the audience as much that way. But I'm wondering, you've done a few sort of online sort of things like Kaiju Conline last year, right?
I did. That was actually a lot of fun, and I actually made some money with that. But the online stuff, and this goes for Anime NYC, did some online stuff. It's not to the point, because it's still kind of experimental, but it wasn't at the point where it was giving me the money that a lot like an in-person show was giving me. Mm-hmm. And for Kaiju Conline, I think they did an incredible job. I wish it was a real show. I wish those guys really did put on a real kaiju show, because it would be incredible. And it really took my active participation in order to make some profit on it. And I mean, I did. I was on Instagram Live both days of the show, and I set up my – it's funny because I cleared off my dining room table, and I put all of my prints out on the table, and I just sort of like panned over my prints. And then my wife was there, and she was like pointing at them and like asking me ridiculous questions. And a lot of people got a kick out of it because she's not a kaiju fan at all. she likes Ultra 7 because she likes Dan. She doesn't really like Godzilla stuff. She kind of liked Gamera 3 when I was showing her the ending. She calls it the gross one because she saw the part where Gamera rips into Iris's abdomen. She's like, oh, is that the gooey one? I said, yeah, that's the gooey one. Anyway, back to Kaiju Conline. But no, it was fun. And I did a lot of like live streaming with other kaiju artists like Bill Couture, who's always a blast. But, you know, it's the kind of thing that you have to make it work for you. If you just sit back and wait for people to find you online, it's not going to happen. We're just not there yet. Unless we go full virtual reality, until every person in America has a headset and you're in like a virtual dealer's room, it's just you're not going to make the money that you do with the in-person convention. That's at least my experience so far.
Yeah, like I know the Ultraman Connection Live things, they have these live streams where they are pushing forward merchandise, but those tend to be very, they have a few items. It's not a huge menu for the people that are shopping to kind of go through. And even that has run into its share of controversy because they were also selling NFTs in the marketplace there, which is not a popular thing to do nowadays.
Right.
But interested to see how the future of these online conventions progresses with in-person convention coming back. If it's something that was really just a product of the necessity of the no longer having in-person conventions, or, you know, if the convenience and accessibility to people that can't travel for whatever reason or have social anxiety or whatever, if that kind of is enough to keep them going, or if, you know, some of the bigger conventions that have these in-person components continue to have their online presence,
right?
Kind of having, you know, a virtual dealer's room running at the same time as your physical one or something like that, for example.
Right.
But that's all just spitballing ideas.
No, I mean, and again, like it'll take another full-on lockdown for them to sort of figure it out, because once in-person shows come back, they're not going to go back to that model, because I don't know how successful it was for other shows, but I was involved in the New York Comic Con one, and I heard the San Diego online show was like a big dud, and the DC Fandom and all those shows. But, you know, they're going to go back to what they know. And it's the same thing like with the streaming stuff. Like, you know, the streaming subscriptions ballooned by like millions and millions and millions of subscribers during lockdown, because it was a no-brainer, right? People were home, they needed content. And now I think subscription has dropped because people are going back to their daily lives. And, you know, it's sort of pushed forward plans by like, I think like another, like by 5 years, that we're sort of 5 years down the road, all these people were just like, these companies are just going to go forward with these streaming apps we've been working on, which funny enough led to my union almost striking over all this stuff, which is an entirely different podcast altogether. I will not get into that here because there's been enough said about our union striking. But basically it has caused some issues, and I think from what I'm seeing, if the online stuff, see, the online conventions are run by the shows that put them on. Mm-hmm. But I think if somebody out there, there's like an Elon Musk or a Jeff Bezos that figures out how to do a convention online, kind of like Napster, right? Like Napster came in and changed the entire music industry for the worst, I think, because music has not really been as good since Napster came and started siphoning off profits for artists, because it's not giving musicians incentive to pursue a career and to do that, that struggle to be a musician, which takes years and years and so much time of your life. If there's someone out there that has some sort of online convention plan, but I just don't see it happening anytime soon. Again, it's going to take a lot of innovation and, what's the saying? What is that, mother of necessity, or, you know, that saying,
Ken? The mother of invention.
Yes. Yeah. It's going to be something like that again. So we'll see what happens, man. We'll see how it progresses.
Well, I think we can then pivot, because, you know, we were talking a little bit about changes and my favorite show, at least, you know, one I look forward to the most. It's one of my favorite activities all year long is G-Fest. And that's being held at a different convention center this upcoming year than it had previously been. And over the years, there's been numerous, you know, issues with the old hotel,
to say the least. Yeah.
Yeah. From what I had heard from some, you know, inside sources, they've kind of planned to have the event in 2021 and in 2020. Last year, everything I heard when it was still on the to-do agenda, sounded like they were doing, you know, spacing in the panel rooms, which is something that wasn't happening at the anime conventions that I had seen before. So to their credit, there. But I think that that's something that really could have been put forward and communicated a little better to the general public, because the way that GFest social media had been acting about the nature of the pandemic, especially early on, was concerning to me.
Right. GFest to me, without starting my whole story about it, GFest to me is like, let's say it's like that uncle you have that you love him, right? And you have so much fun with this uncle. And the uncle just always manages to get himself in trouble. And you always try to help the uncle, try to bail him out. And every time you do, he gets into more trouble. And all he does is keep disappointing you. And all you want to do is to see him thrive, see him do well. And, you know, Uncle Joey just can't get his shit together. And at some point, you just have to go, I've done everything I could with Uncle Joey. He can't get his act together. I think I'm going to have to walk away. And that's kind of my whole philosophy and attitude regarding G-Fest at this point in time. I also love the show, because when I do these bigger shows, it's more like business. And with G-Fest, they do a great job of making it a family-like atmosphere. I have so many friends in the Godzilla fandom now. Like, I have friends that I've made, like legitimate real life friends that I made from that show, which kind of doesn't really happen when you get into your late 30s and early 40s, that, you know, you get married, you have kids, you just sort of, you know, sort of lose touch with your friends until you're retired. And it's been the opposite with me. And I also met you as well. And we've gone to the movies together and had a great time. And I met your now wife, and congratulations on getting married. And
oh, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, that, you're welcome.
The, you know, going to the movies, Japan Cuts, that's also arguably a convention that we went to this year. So.
Pretty much. Yeah. And they did a really good job, and, you know, we didn't die. And yeah, so, you know, let's bring this back to G-Fest. Yeah, it's just a show that, you know, on paper, it's like, wait, what? There's a Godzilla show? And then you go and you have all this fun as an attendee. When you go as a vendor, or especially now an artist, it's an entirely different story. And if you want, I could sort of give my history. And I'm only, and I should put a disclaimer, my opinions are my own and my experience is my own. There are other artists that have similar experiences to mine. And this year, the shit has hit the fan, but we will get to that. So Kevin, if you'd like, I can maybe give a brief history of my time with the show and how over the years it's gotten progressively more and more negative.
To put I'd be quite curious to get your perspective on that.
Right. So I started the show in 2015. Yes, because 14 is when I started doing Godzilla art. And then I started in 2015. I met Michael Tchaikovsky there, Chris Oglio, James Lechner, David Eric Dopko, Rich Aso, John Bumpus, all the, you know, the regulars at G-Fest. I met them. I sold out of my prints, first show I ever did. I did phenomenal, unbelievable experience, Kevin. I couldn't. It felt like that's where I needed to be in my life. I can't explain it. It was just sort of like, it felt like when Goku and Dragon Ball go Super Saiyan for the first time. I mean, there's no it's the stupidest way I can explain it, but it just felt like so good. And I feel like I was I was doing something that just felt right. You know, not that my career feels wrong, but to have like my hobby, like I was basically doing something as a hobby, making Godzilla posters, and to not only do well with it, but to sell out of my artwork and make friends. I mean, I was not expecting that at all. So by the time that show was over, I did where it started to go south for me a little bit. And I want to preface this with at G-Fest, in the hotel, Artist Alley was in a restaurant on the other side of the, not the other side of the hotel, but down the hall. And that's kind of where it's been. Now, what I noticed was the next year, I did a G-Fest poster that I sold it the previous year and no one said anything. So I went and I made a new one, posted it online, and somebody from the G-Fest staff commented on it and said he was going to report me to the guy that runs G-Fest. And I will not be naming anybody, by the way. And I was like, wait, what? Like, why am I being reported? Like, this is ridiculous. So I got really mad, and because I didn't understand. And they basically said, look, we can't have anything with Godzilla on it associated with G-Fest. I said, oh, okay, well, and how about you send me a private message rather than blow me up publicly on Facebook, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed there was a Japanese artist who I will not name that was also doing artwork with Godzilla and G-Fest in the same image. And when I would reach out to the G-Fest staff, the two people who I believe run the show and the website or the social media account, they kind of were a little condescending to me. And it was unfortunate because it really put a bad taste in my mouth, how basically they've been running the show for 20 years, you know, to handle this stuff. Nothing was ever handled. So I said, okay, there's a double standard here. I see how it's going. But you know what? I like Artist Alley. I like my friends. I'll do the show again. So in the next year, that was 16, 17. 17 was okay. It was just a little bit more drama. But 18 was when something happened. Something spooked the staff. And they were kind of freaking out about Toho showing up at G-Fest. Now, they imposed a mandate on us in late 2018 saying, for the 19 show, I might add, that you can only have 33% of Toho-related art. Now, this is on top of us in 2000. Oh, I'm sorry, to go back 1 year. The drama of 2017 was that we got kicked out of our space because they were renovating the restaurant. And they put us in the basement, and that started the war between Artist Alley. I don't want to say war, but there was some ground fire between Artist Alley and the dojo room, because the artists were like, what about the dojo room? Can we have that? And then the dojo guys were freaking out on us. And then it was a sort of back and forth. So that was the drama of 18. And then leading into 19, it was this 33% rule. And everyone was freaking out. I was angry. We were furious. We said, how can we do a Godzilla show with 33% of Godzilla artwork? So I wrote an email to the guy that runs G-Fest, and he, you know, understood me, and he was like, okay, maybe we could figure something out. And other people wrote emails to him, and he relented, and he said, okay, you guys can have 42%, which is kind of odd, don't you think, Kevin, that you can sort of go from 33% to 40%? Now, there was nothing...
arbitrary yet specific, like... Somehow right. That 42 was arrived at, like, calculated, and I'm very curious to find out what's the metrics were for arriving at that.
Right. There was no explanation, because there never really is, unfortunately. And so we fast forward to 2019. We're all at the show. We're all disgruntled. One of my artist buddies, he puts up his whole display, all Godzilla work. He didn't care. I said, okay, you know what? If he's doing it, I'm going to do it. Nobody came to check on us. Nobody said anything. Nobody cared. And the people that they thought were from Toho was basically G from X Plus walking around. For some reason, they thought he was Toho, but he wasn't. So there was some confusion there. So it was a big to-do over nothing, Kevin. So 2019 leads us into 2020, where the proverbial shit hits the fan. What happened in 2020 was COVID, right? We all know what happened with COVID. Now, New York was pretty much ground zero yet again, unfortunately. New York is where I live, and I've been here my whole life. I'm a native. I've seen a lot of crazy stuff go down in New York, including 9/11, the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, and COVID. And COVID was horrible here, Kevin. You live in Jersey, right? So you're pretty close. So you know New York and New Jersey were horrible. And we were having 800 plus people a day were dying in New York City. And I have my brother who works in a nursing home. He said it was like the equivalent of Thanos snapping his fingers from one day to the next with how many people died in his nursing home, including a young doctor that he really liked. And he got COVID, and to this day, me and my wife say we've never seen him look so terrible. He said it was unlike any disease he's ever had or any virus he's ever had. I have friends that are first responders that were telling me, don't go to an ER. They said they've never seen so many dead bodies. It was like anything you've ever seen in New York. That first wave from March to May was horrific. I mean, there were freezer trucks outside of funeral parlors with dead bodies. I think there's still refrigerator trucks in the Red Hook waterfront with dead bodies, where they were digging mass graves in uninhabited islands around the city. It was pandemonium here. I mean, sirens every day. I mean, I remember one day in April, Kevin, I heard sirens from the morning I woke up to the morning I went to bed. It was unlike anything ever witnessed. And then comes the tweets of G-Fest. And now the showrunner does not run any social media accounts whatsoever, which sort of goes back to what I was talking about with leadership and being responsible and owning up to your behaviors and how things are run and how your staff is running stuff. So he started posting on his Twitter account about how COVID is no worse than the flu. Wash your hands. I'll see you all in July. People, including myself, freak the F out when they saw that. A lot of the people that were on Twitter were the artists from Artist Alley, because a lot of the vendors tend to skew older, and only, I want to say, maybe 3 or 4 vendors from G-Fest are actually on social media in terms of promoting their business and pushing it. And so most of it was the artist. And the artist started, and not only the artist, but friends of mine and acquaintances that wanted to go to G-Fest saw this and were getting disgusted. Now, to add insult to injury, I think when the Democratic National Convention pulled out of the Rosemont area, because they were also in the same hotel, instead of looking at that as a cause for concern, they tweeted again, the DNC is pulling out of the hotel. Good news, we have more rooms for G-Fest attendees. So that was just throwing more gasoline on the fire. So a lot of the artists were chiming in, and a lot of the artists were very, very incredibly vocal, as artists tend to be, about how the social media account was being handled. There was, to add more gasoline to the fire, and there's definitely tweets I'm missing out on, and, you know, there was just an overall insensitivity when so many people, as you recall, again, were dying in New York, that this person who was tweeting this had no idea that this thing was going to spread the way it did, and it certainly did, and almost every state in the country has had its own version of New York, unfortunately. So there was an article in G-Fest about the blackface makeup in King Kong versus Godzilla. I'm sorry, I said G-Fan magazine, which runs G-Fest. And the article was almost, I guess you could say, defending the use of blackface and when woke culture would come after it. Let me tell you something. A lot of artists, I'm not including myself in this, a lot of the more younger artists tend to be very liberal, incredibly woke, incredibly enlightened to what's going on. They have their pulse on society. I'm a little older, so I'm kind of have my head in the dirt, or head in the sand a little bit, so I'm not as in tune. But these kids freaked out, again, calling them racist and xenophobic, and it was really ugly, and some really bad words were used, and it kind of went viral, and it really did turn a lot of people off, not just artists, but a lot of other people that were looking to bring their kids to the show, and now they're saying, who is this virus denier that's now defending blackface? So it got really bad, and again, a lot of it was artists. So in January of, well, let me just stop right there. G-Fest was canceled. People's monies were refunded. They said, okay, we're going to come back next year. So 2021, they announced, right? It was 2020 or late last year, or early this year, they announced it'd be a new hotel, bigger space, much nicer. And everybody was sort of excited, including myself, even though I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it because the dates fall on my wife's birthday and it's a big milestone birthday. So I was like, you know what? I'll step away. G-Fest has given me enough agita the last few years that I really could use a break from it. There's just too much drama compared to every other show I do. And I've been doing shows since 2015 all over the country. And the drama that I am subjected to at G-Fest is unlike any other drama I've ever experienced. So I said, let me just take a break. So in the beginning of this year, I got promoted at work. And the day I got promoted, I was getting messages from artist friends saying, hey, you should go check our G-Fest Artist Alley Facebook page because there's something going on in there and your name's getting mentioned. I said, what? So I go in there and the guy who runs G-Fest had his wife infiltrate our Facebook group, asked the group admin to take off G-Fest from the Artist Alley name because they didn't want to be associated with our Facebook page anymore because of the horrendous things the artists were saying. Now, this goes back to those tweets, right? So his wife comes into the page and starts arguing with all of us and saying how he does a great job putting on a show for all of us. And he can't believe the way we're speaking about him. And there was nothing mentioned about his tweets, but regardless, one of our young artists, who I won't name, he was going toe-to-toe with her, and I was very impressed and very respectful of this young artist, because he was arguing. Like, I couldn't believe. And then my name got mentioned because in 2018, the owner of the show very kindly put on a gallery exhibit of all my Godzilla posters. It was unbelievable. He is a fan of my work, and I appreciate it. And I'm not here to just talk trash on him, because I've had nothing but pleasant exchanges with him in person, in email. He did a very incredibly nice thing by giving me a gallery space, which no other artist, I believe, has ever had the opportunity to do so. And I'm eternally grateful to him. And if he's listening, I hope he knows I am grateful to him. And the staff, including the people I've had issues with, are also big fans of my work, which is why this is such a heartbreaking thing for me to deal with, and why it is so stressful for me, because I know they love my work and I love the show and I do like the guys that run it. And then having his wife come in and call me out and saying how I'm saying these heinous things about her husband on social media after he put on a show for me. And I responded like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't recall saying anything terrible about him. I've definitely said a few things, but I didn't call him out. Some stuff was said. And I know I've read those comments from other artists, and he was called really bad names. And I know I was not one of the people that said anything bad, but I was definitely running my mouth and sharing my opinion, because I was very emotional, very heated by what was going on with COVID and the sort of negligence on their part. I debated reaching out to this guy, but I didn't. I said, whatever, I'll just let it go. It got really ugly. Then it just got quiet. And then I want to say 2 months ago, so that was January of this year, 2 months ago, someone else is now running Artist Alley. He runs the dealer's area. Now he's running Artist Alley. And a new rule came out in a contract saying that they will not allow the sale of any Toho-related artwork without a license from Toho. All the artists were freaking out again. They basically said, if you don't have the license, you can't sell artwork. So artists started pulling out of the show. A lot of artists think that it's a personal attack on Artist Alley. Now, this is where things sort of expand, where my experience with other cons, this is where everything is sort of coming together. If you read any contract for any other convention in the country, that, and I had photographic evidence, and I shared this in our Facebook group, New York Comic Con, Anime NYC, MegaCon, Awesome Con, Emerald City Comic Con, C2E2, biggest shows in the country, on top of every other show, has the same exact language in its contract prohibiting the sale of any unlicensed artwork. That is to protect the convention from any sort of legal action by any of these companies. And it basically puts all the responsibility on the artist itself. So if you go to this show, you are at risk of having your work taken down by any of the IP holders. Now, historically, and I've talked to people from DC, I've talked to people from Toho. Historically, it's always been a gray area, because the money that artists make in Artist Alley is basically peanuts compared to what they can make selling merchandise, which is what these companies mostly care about. Mm-hmm. So they kind of always turned a blind eye to Artist Alley, which is, again, I tried to explain this to a lot of the artists, and the staff at G-Fest are, of course, standing by their word, saying you need to have a license to sell, otherwise you can't sell. I mean, what are they going to say? They're not going to come out and say, well, every other show does it this way. I mean, it's kind of always been in their contract, but for some reason, they are enforcing it this year. And a lot of artists are seeing it as a very personal attack over what happened on Twitter and in our Facebook group. If you connect the dots, it kind of goes back to all the issues the artists have had. Now, I have several friends who are vendors. One of them is a really smart businessman and suggested that I treat G-Fest as if like I was a ninja, where I just go in and make my money and leave. it's easy to, you know, it's easier said than done, and that's how I am with other conventions. But when your venue, your avenue to sell your work keeps getting moved around or jerked around, and then you keep having rules imposed on you to limit what you can sell, then it doesn't even become about business anymore. It becomes about, like, what am I even doing this for? Because I can't even make any money. And then for this year, for it to be like no Godzilla art at a Godzilla convention, it's like, how can I even be a ninja when I'm not even allowed to sell Godzilla artwork? I can't even show up. And no one's going to buy Gamera work. And I'm telling you this as a fact, because my Godzilla work outsells my Gamera work by 100 to 1.
So is the contract specifically referring to Toho by name, or is it just saying no unauthorized characters of any kind?
Last I checked, it was basically Toho, and it said you had to get a license agreement. Now, the thing is, they know that they can't get – they don't sell license agreements to artists. It doesn't make any financial sense. It doesn't exist. Most companies won't do it because the money's not worth it, which is why they look the other way. They don't care.
Yeah, they and care, it's a huge liability for the company also, because whatever they license becomes an official product as part of the ongoing legacy of that franchise then.
Correct.
So, you know, that's why they tend to be very persnickety when it comes to, you know, their licensed products, because they know that nerds like me will be like, well, what about the Tricephalon figure from 1970 something? And, you know, it's kind of like this stuff never goes away.
Right. And the problem is that Toho wants, if you look at it, Toho doesn't want anything to do with G-Fest. They really don't. I mean, I know they have to check in with them. But they really don't want to be associated with it. It's not like a show like Star Wars Celebration. The artists that sell there, they're all officially licensed. Like, you have to have approval. Mm-hmm. And it's a really great thing, because then it's like, well, I can go to the show. It's all sanctioned by Lucasfilm and Disney. We have a license to sell this work. It's all official. It's literally all official Star Wars artwork. It's a huge deal to be accepted into that show, because that's like, it puts you on the map. Now, could G-Fest do something like that? Of course they can, but I don't think they want to spend, what, the $50,000 license that it costs from Toho. They're not going to want to do that because it's a small show. I don't know the ins and outs of where things went. I kind of know the story of what went wrong with Toho, but the fact that they never want to participate in a show says a lot about it.
Well, there's a whole history with G-Fest that I can kind of go into a little bit. And it goes arguably back to the beginning, because the reason why there's a G-Fest as opposed to a G-Con, you know, if you go to the Wikipedia page, you'll see, oh, this started as G-Con, and then it changed its name to G-Fest for some reason. Well, one of the individuals that was running G-Con at G-Con one year screened Godzilla vs. Destoroyah without consent and got sued.
Right.
So that caused him to basically schism. He continued to run his show G-Con out of New York, while G-Fest ran out of Chicago and the LA. So that's why G-Fest is what it is.
Right.
And there were repeated incidents over the years. There were bootleg video dealers that were arrested in 1997, you know, taken out of the convention in handcuffs. Right. That happened, again at Chiller Theater convention later, and until basically eventually the police told Toho to stop making them do this. The entire creation of G-Fantas as an entity for the magazine was because Toho stepped in and said, you can't keep using our characters in publishing this fan fiction. So these are all, you know, interventions that have made them nervous about things. And frankly, even as late as 2010, I remember there were some, I don't know how serious they were, but there were threats. They had, you know, an official licensed DVD distributor set up in a hall across the hall from a bootleg DVD distributor, and it got heated. So, you know, things like that can make them antsy. And then what's happened in the most recent year is Toho has been on a bit of a rampage in terms of protecting their copyright, shutting down online stores, selling bootleg merchandise.
Right.
That said, these tend to be, you know, online shops that are printing, you know, like blankets and t-shirts with just posters straight from the things on them, as opposed to fan art. You know, there's a huge gulf between fan art that's sold at a convention and somebody selling a quote Godzilla coloring book on Amazon.com self-published.
Right.
When you're just taking the official stuff and slapping it on a product and selling it, that is taking money out of Toho's wallet. Whereas the fan artists tend to just be selling prints that usually don't take anything from them. You know, are the actions technically illegal? Yes,
they are.
It's a matter of, is it worth anyone's time to actually prosecute this? And that's where it gets much more dubious on those pursuing those fan artists. And there's a huge culture that's arisen from fan work. If you go to Comic Con in Japan, it's, you know, 700,000 people all selling fan work, and that includes works that are Toho related. You can go and buy Godzilla Doujinshi, and many prominent official artists come out of this culture, and that's how they get they hone their craft and they get noticed, and they're able to then get these official jobs working in these, and that includes in this franchise. You know, some of the top artists working on Godzilla stuff have started by selling fan art. So this is not just something beneath the notice of a company like Toho. It's actually a potential pool for recruiting new artistic vision. It would be stabbing themselves in the foot to go after them.
And that's pretty much my entire plan, is doing the fan art to get to more official work. And it's leading me to official work, not so much with Godzilla, not yet, but I'm getting a lot of official artwork with Super Raya. And it's, for me, Ultraman is, you know, second to Godzilla, so it's just as good. And I have theories on what happened with Artist Alley. I was getting incredibly frustrated with some of the people that were coming out and speaking against the artists, because a lot of these people are not artists. They don't have the same mentality. They don't know what the journey's like. They're not. Some of these artists are living paycheck to paycheck, or I have artist friends that aren't even in the kaiju world that were just living from convention to convention. That's how they made their money, and they had all their money taken away in 2020. You know, because you can make pretty good money doing shows, especially if you tour the country and the world sometimes. So, you know, I do this work because not only do I love it, because I also want other opportunities outside of doing fan art. And I would love to get an officially licensed Godzilla poster. You think I would do anything to have one of those Mondo poster gigs with Godzilla. I was so mad I missed the train on that. But you have to start somewhere. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. They want to sort of spew the whole, you know, the legal mumbo jumbo, and they think just getting a license is easy and cheap, and it's not. And a lot of them don't realize we do this out of love of the genre and love of art, and it's just a journey for us that we have to, you know, filled with ups and downs, that we have to take this path and get to where we want to be. And so, you know, the fan art. And a lot of those Mondo guys started as fan artists too. A lot of guys in the poster posse, fan artists, you know, very little followers on Instagram. And now they have hundreds of thousands of followers. And again, you got to start somewhere. And that's sort of the grassroots artist movement is fan artwork. And yes, it is illegal. It's not right. Especially if you're selling it and putting it on blankets. And I've had my artwork stolen many, 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 many times over the years. and on Amazon, on TeePublic, and I know who Toho is going after, and it's a lot of these, you know, pop-up eBay sellers that are putting all those beautiful Arai Heisei era posters on T-shirts and notebooks and blankets and what have you. But my theory with G-Fest Artist Alley is that when they started, it was a really small artist alley. I mean, you had, you know, the guys doing the original kaiju books like Frank Parr. You had Matt Frank and Zorno and Eggleton, and they were like the big three there. And right around when the Legendary movies started coming out, 2014, because I did 15, and then other guys like Lenny and Dope Pope and Nick Chev and Larry Quach, they started coming in 16, 17, 18. And all these guys that were coming in, myself included, were all professional artists. We all make our living doing artwork. And, you know, I think G-Fest Artist Alley grew to a point that was, I think, a little too uncomfortable for the people that run the show. I think it went from being this cute little thing with fan art and a few of the official artists to now this big artist alley that went from like 13 people to like now it's 50 with a waiting list, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that show is really a toy show with a little artist alley. And now it, you have artists that are outnumbering the vendors. And I just don't think I think they got really uncomfortable with it. And I think they got uncomfortable with us because we all do a lot of promoting of the show. We're touring around the country doing other major conventions. And I just think it was always an afterthought for them. Where other shows, you're treated as like royalty practically. This show, we're just, oh, put them in the basement. You know, and the hardest part about all of this, Kevin, from day one, is that whenever there is a tweet or a Facebook post about the show, you never get a chance to speak to the showrunner himself. There's always someone else to speak for him, so you can never catch his ear. And it's gotten increasingly frustrating, especially when it came to a head this year, where there's all these rules and all these artists are asking questions and nobody's answering the questions. They're just deferring back to the contract, and no one has sort of come out and said, you know, this is why we're imposing this rule. Technically, they don't really have to, right? They really don't have to say anything. It just, this is part of the contract. It's standard in every other convention contract. Case closed, deal with it. But there's never any sort of dialogue. You know, when you have your wife sort of fighting your battles on social media, I mean, again, this kind of goes back to what I said about Anime NYC, where, you know, they messed up and they came and they took ownership of it and they explained themselves. And, you know, when you explain yourself and when you apologize and you vow to do a better job, like basically once you take ownership of a mistake that you made and you're working towards making it better, I mean, who's going to get mad at you for doing that, right? I mean, that's just human nature. If you're doing something like this and just disappearing and not letting other people fight your battles, it just looks cowardly in a way, unfortunately. And you're closing off that communication and no other statements have been made.
And yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I mean, a point of contrast, because I know one that's come up with is that BotCon, the Transformers convention, had right. also banned fan art, but they made the announcement that they were banning fan art as part of, basically, they had a big problem with people making bootleg Transformers toys there.
Right.
And they made an announcement that they were going to ban fan art there. But then there was a backlash on social media. This is back in 2012. And 3 days later, they rescinded the decision. And I think that shows a real, that they're really listening to the needs of the community.
Right.
That's something that would perhaps behoove the showrunners at G-Fest a little bit more. There is just that level of transparency in terms of at least explaining why decisions are being made.
Right. Transparency is probably the word I is best suited for the situation. There's no transparency. There never is. There never was. It just becomes a sort of, sad to say, it almost feels like a dictatorship where it's my way or the highway. I don't have to answer any of your questions. And that is not the best way to endear yourself to the people. If they came out and they said, hey, look, guys, we're towing it too close to the line. Toho's breathing down my neck, or breathing down our neck. We can't allow the sale of art, fan art. I really apologize. I know how much a show, anything like that, but nothing like that is being said. And then again, when you connect the dots back to what happened on Twitter and then our Facebook page, it just looks like a very personal, vindictive move. And, you know, you can say that the artists are a problem for this show and a source of a constant headache. And on social media, yeah, it can seem that way. But the artists are also the younger ones. The artists are also the ones that are more on social media, the more outspoken. Some of the vendors upstairs are at retirement age, you know, that they're not on social media. Very few of them are on social media at all. And they're you know, they're not doing, I don't want to speak for all the vendors. It's not fair because, like I said, there's plenty of good vendors upstairs. It's a few bad apples that are upstairs that have actually come out and gotten mad at Artist Alley thinking that we're taking money away. So it sort of created this weird little artist versus vendor thing that doesn't really exist, only with a few people. It's kind of like the Yankees and Boston Red Sox rivalry. It kind of just exists on paper, but it doesn't really exist in person, and just puts a bad taste in people's mouths. And I think a lot of that comes, again, because there's no transparency. If there was transparency, if there was communication, reasons why things are being done, I don't think people would be going at, I don't think artists would be going after vendors. Vendors wouldn't be saying stuff about artists. I don't think any of it would happen, because when leadership doesn't speak out, people are going to just make up their own narrative. And that's basically what happens with G-Fest. And every year it's the same thing. It's just another narrative gets made up because there's no communication whatsoever. And Kevin, I've done, like I said, New York Comic Con, MegaCon, Awesome Con, Anime NYC, Five Points. Those are my big shows. It's really cut and dry, man. You apply for your table, you get your number, you sign the contract, putting all the liability on you. You take the risk, you show up, you sell your work, you have a good time, you go home. I've never seen a show that 8 to 9 months ahead of the next show is filled with drama. I've never encountered anything like that. And my artist buddies who do shows, I have a buddy of mine who's basically touring the entire United States right now. He went from New York to the West Coast, up to the Pacific Northwest. Now, I don't even know where. I think he's in the Midwest at C2E2 selling his amazing artwork, his great kaiju artwork. And he said, yeah, he's like, he does a lot of shows, way more than me. Doesn't have any of these problems, Kevin. He signs the same contracts we all sign, very similar wording to the one at G-Fest. He's never gotten arrested or taken out in handcuffs. He sold artwork at shows that Toho was at, and they come hang out with him, you know, and somebody like Attack Peter. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with his artwork, but yeah. He's kind of blowing up, and I've known him. I met him at MegaCon a few years before he blew up, and he told me his story. He was at Designer Con in 2019, sitting right by Toho. And he had his Godzilla artwork there. And he went up to Toho and said, who has the license for Godzilla? And they said, oh, Mondo does. So he approached Mondo and he showed him his work, and the rest is history. So he didn't get arrested. He didn't get shut down, you know. It's kind of hard to not see it as a sort of personal vindictive move. I hate to say it. But it's just sort of unfortunate. It's really come to this.
I think that really there sad. Might be, you know, it's very difficult to see. I think that there is a genuine concern in terms of being that having had previous legal interactions. I think there is a place for concern on that front, but right. Perhaps. an unwillingness to listen to what kind of the industry standards have been for that sort of artist alley. And also, there are bigger fish to fry if you're going to go down that route of trying to police content at your convention. Right. Because there are, you know, I don't want to whataboutism anything, but there are numerous events that go down at G-Fest that would be considered trademark violations if somebody were to really look at them closely.
Right. No, I know what you're talking about. I definitely do. Yeah. So please go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't want to, because I don't have the that inside look into directly who's making the decisions. I don't want to make any claims there, but I can appreciate the perspective that that some of the artists have, that this might have been retaliatory.
Right.
So from that perspective, what can the artists do? I know a lot are saying that they're just not going to come to the convention, but I've heard, you know, several people say, well, what if we just ignore the wording in the contract and offer our art anyway, or do suggested donations, or you get a free Godzilla print with the purchase of something else, or under the table dealings.
Right. There was a lot of similar wacky ideas like that when they had the 33% rule, and then everyone just showed up and sold their Godzilla art anyway. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think, the reason why a lot of these artists are freaking out is because some of these artists don't do any other show besides G-Fest. And this is like a major source of income. And my argument was like, guys, do other shows. Just don't do this show. You could sell your artwork safely at any other convention around the world, except maybe like a Toho convention. But any other convention around the world, you can sell your art freely. I was like, just do other shows. You don't need this show. And I think that's why the vocal minority has been so loud about it, because they are just legitimately freaking out. I mean, imagine if you had one event every year that you put all your eggs into this basket to make all your money, and now they're telling you you can't sell stuff. So of course you're going to freak out. So some of them are listening to me, and some of them are choosing to do the show. And just the sale of originals is allowed. But no artist in their right mind is going to spend an entire year doing original drawings just for one show, because you're going to kill yourself, first of all. You don't want to limit, you don't want to limit what you're doing. I mean, if you have commission work, it's a lot of drawing, and prints are just a lot easier. There's also the donation thing. There's the not selling your art and just showing up. But my advice for artists is, reach out to the showrunners and let them know what the show means to you, and ask for a reason why this is going on. See what the answer to that will be. And the other piece of advice is, just don't do the show. Just don't do it. Do other shows. Do your own artwork. Do original stuff. You know, make your own little fanzine. Make your own, like, comic and sell it at other shows. Just don't do the show. You know, it's only has progressively gotten worse. It doesn't look like it's going to get any better anytime soon, unless maybe there's a sort of transition to a different team that's running it. But it's really, if this is how it's going to be, it's not going to get better. So either the showrunners sort of have to wake up and communicate with the artists and be more transparent, or they're just going to continue getting really bad public relations on social media, because that's basically what's happening. And again, I don't really have, like, again, some artists, you know, if you guys are listening, you could just show up and set up shop like it's nothing. I mean, will they really make like 20 or 30 artists leave a convention? I doubt it, but it is also in their right to say, hey, you can't sell this work in here. And we don't have, the artists don't have the benefit of hiding down in a basement anymore. Now it's out in the open alongside the dealer area. So there's more exposure. And yeah, I guess it could be a little more dangerous. But again, if that wasn't something that was communicated, we don't know. It's all speculation at this point. But I really, again, I just can't stress enough that just do other shows. I mean, it's just that simple. There's a few little shows like Kaiju Days in Illinois. There's some other little kaiju shows. Kaiju Days is something I'm considering doing because they're really great guys that run it. It looks like a fun show on social media, the way they advertise it. It looks like a professional show. G-Fest, unfortunately, looks a little dated, and the quality just isn't there for a top-tier level show. It just sort of looks like something that you would expect it to look like from the 90s, unfortunately. Kaiju Days seems like a lot of fun, and I can guarantee you, if a bunch of us went to that show, it would boost attendance because they have said to me that, you know, they would love to have me there and they could give me a free table. And I've definitely considered doing it. It's a small show, but you know what? San Diego Comic-Con and New York Comic-Con were also small shows when they started. G-Fest included. It can grow like anything else. So If people just defect, go to another show, make it your own G-Fest. I told someone recently, I said, you know what, Anime NYC, I had Dope Pope and Lenny there, and it was like our own little G-Fest, and we made our own little like Godzilla circle there. There's no reason why you can't do that with another show. I mean, you know, everybody's like, oh, G-Fest is good because it gets everyone from around the country to meet up at one spot. Well, that's great, but what about another show, right? I mean, can't you just do that for some other convention somewhere else that you all get into and you make your own little G-Fest? Just start something new. Don't rely on anyone else. Just rely on you know, your own skill set and you know, your ability to do other shows and organize other artists to also join you. And let me tell you something. Having another Godzilla artist is not going to hurt your business because me, Dope Hope, and Lenny were directing customers to each other's tables, you know, saying, hey, go buy from that guy, go buy from, like, you help each other out and you build a community that way. So just build your community someplace else. That's really the best advice I can give to some of these young artists.
Yeah. I think that is one of the things about the fandom, you know, perhaps because it's a smaller one, is that you do have a lot of these interlocking, relationships. And that might be part of why there's so much drama, frankly, around G-Fest, is that kind of Everybody knows everybody. In terms of other conventions, I know that Japan World Heroes is kind of getting rolled into Power Morphicon. So, the premier tokusatsu general convention is now going to be, I guess, an annual thing instead of a biannual thing, which seems like a good thing, even if you have to, you know, share your space with Power Rangers people. Then there is this All Monsters Attack Expo that was announced for happening in Indianapolis.
Yeah,
I don't know much about it. I'm kind of getting the impression it might be one of those shows that's about, you know, sort of vendors' rooms and autographs. But they might have, you know, we'll see what happens with that if they get a little bit more variety there. We'll find out once they start making announcements.
Right.
But there are, you know, as you said, there are options. I'm gonna definitely keep going to G-Fest. As far as I've seen, I'm excited for, you know, the kind of upcoming things going on at G-Fest in terms of the new hotel, the new translators for the guests. We'll see kind of, I've heard some things about guest management that might be improved as well. So definitely some good things there. It's just sort of a shame that there's this specter that's hanging over the artist Sally.
Right. I mean, it's unfortunate because it's a lot of these big changes that we've all been sort of barking about for years to happen, and now it's happening at the exclusion of artist Sally, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted, you know, if people are listening to this that are involved in the show, I love the show. It means the world to me doing that show. I've met so many wonderful friends. I've met people that are fans of my work that look forward to me every year. My buddy calls me the mayor of G-Fest because I know everyone there. And You know, I love talking to people. It's such an amazing event. And I think that's why I get very emotional and just heartbroken over the situation and what it's become for artists, because we just want to be involved in the show and we just want to hang out with our friends and our fans and make some money and have a great time. I mean, you know, when I did 4 days of New York Comic Con, I was tired from it at the end, but nothing gets me tired like G-Fest, because I'm just having so much fun. And I think that is why a lot of people are freaking out, because it's, again, it's where we go to nerd out, where we can just be like, you could talk to almost anybody in that convention about a Mazer tank or the Super X or Dogora or Gargantuas. And sure, you have those Godzilla fans that won't even, let alone watch Ultraman, but won't watch Gamera, which is always weird to me. But aside from that, it's just a place where you can go and be yourself and be a total freaking Godzilla nerd. So, you know, that's sort of been taken away from all these artists that I think they're just sort of heartbroken too, and they're just reacting and lashing out. So I hope that the artists that end up doing the show do well and are able to sort of, you know, buck the rules and just sell their Godzilla work. And again, if not, yeah, it's going to be like a bad breakup and you're going to be hurt, but eventually you'll move on to something else that's better and you just build your community in another place. Or maybe there's someone out there that wants to make their own version of G-Fest somewhere, or maybe this All Monsters Attack blows up, maybe Kaiju, I mean, we don't know. But again, you just build your community elsewhere if you're not willing to build it here, because they clearly don't want us to. That's what it feels like from my perspective. Well, I had to take a sip of water for that one.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
I echo your sentiments. You know, this is a convention I've been going to for over 20 years, so it's something that is very close to my heart. I mean, the last G-Fest I went to, I did 6 panels.
Wow, know? That's awesome.
So it's you know, as you said, it's a family. So you do want to see do the right things. So. I really hope that they'll reconsider about the artist alley, and I'm really hoping that the precautions taken for the pandemic with this upcoming year are adequate. I would frankly like to see vaccine passports very much, and hopefully have requirements for masking, but time will tell how the actual execution is. But the worst thing is if you go out of your way to go to a convention and then wind up being at a place that doesn't feel safe. So it's kind of
right.
I think it would be more comfortable for everyone if they err on the side of caution. So,
well, from what I'm hearing from my buddies that were at C2E2, I believe everyone had to be vaxxed and everybody had to wear a mask, and that is in Chicago. So I'm sure state and local guidelines will sort of facilitate what they'll do. And it's also in their best interest to mitigate it as much as possible. I mean, that's you don't want that bad publicity getting out there about, you know.
You don't want to be like the convention where a new variant is detected.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to be like the Kaiju variant or something. Oh, man. But, you know, again, I do wish them the best of luck in the new space, and I want the show to thrive, and I want it to be this really awesome thing. But, you know, unfortunately, the people that are most qualified to make it look visually like the best show are the ones that are being shoved into sort of shooed away, unfortunately. And, again, I just wish there was a little bit more transparency. And again, this is something that it is very close to my heart. And I was at that G-Con, not the one they showed Destroyer, but I was at the one, oh God, it was in 1997. I was 17 years old. I think it was 97. It was at the New Yorker Hotel. And All I remember from that show, I met Hiroshi Koizumi, I met Teruyoshi Nakano, and I was watching their panels, and I remember I had the Godzilla, the Bandai, the Orange Meltdown theater exclusive in my hand for like $50 or $40, and I didn't buy it, and then the next year it was like $600, and I kicked myself. And then I saw it. I could have won it at a G-Fest auction for $100, but I didn't buy it. And I don't know why I haven't pulled the trigger on it, but those are my biggest memories. So I have fond memories of G-Con, and I remember like my eyes just bulging open, walking into that dealer's room, and I met Bob Eggleton and Marianne, and I bought some of their work, and you know, then to do a convention with them is crazy to me years later. So. Yeah, it just it means a lot. Yeah, it means a lot. And it's, again, it's just sort of hurtful that it's sort of, we've been sort of attacked and all we want to do is just be a part of it, you know?
Yeah, I'm really hoping it that things work out for everyone in the Artist Alley. So
right.
We will see what the upcoming year brings.
Yeah, I guess it's just wait and see, right, at this point?
Well, that's kind of the end of the stuff that I had to discuss. Do you have anything that you want to promote before we bounce?
Sure. I have officially licensed Ultraman sketch cards coming out from R.R. Parks Trading Cards. Really great guy, Richard Parks. He brought me on to work on some sketch cards. I'm currently finishing up series 2, which is Ultra 7, which is my favorite.
Same.
Yeah, my old time favorite is Ultra 7 and Zero, obviously. So doing these cards are, I think I did like 1, 2, 3, 4 drawings of Anne because I love her so much.
Wow. Sketch cards. You got to get both hairstyles, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, yesterday I did the long hair, I did the short hair. I did the side view. I did the mid-length. So I got all different hairstyles of man. I have my artwork printed in the Aliens officially licensed art book from Printed in Blood. Coming out. It's already out in the UK, but it's coming out early next year. You could buy it on Amazon. Let's see. The other stuff I can't really talk about just yet, but if you'd like to look up my artwork, you can find my website, which is www.robo7.com. That's R-O-B-O, the number 7.com. And Instagram is a great way to reach out to me, which my Instagram handle is robo7, R-O-B-O-S-E-V-E-E-N. And yeah, man, I got some big things coming out hopefully soon that I really can't wait to share with people. I'm really excited about it. And other things I hope go through. So we'll see what happens, man. But yeah, that's pretty much where you can find me. That's all I really have to announce right now. So,
looking forward to it. So thanks for coming on and sharing your insights. And anyone that's still listening, hopefully you're not offended or enraged. And we'll hope to see you at a convention in the future.
Yeah, and just to reiterate what I said, I'm not embellishing. I'm not lying about any of this. I'm just stating the facts, the timeline, and how things happen. And that's all. That's all it is. You know, people can fact check stuff I'm saying. I'm sure some details are missing or wrong, but that's basically the gist of everything that's happened. So I just wanted to put that out there.